priceless land. My promises can disappear just like writing in the sand. Treaty, yeah.
You're tuned in to 3CR on Invasion Day, January 26, 2026. And before our First Nations presenters begin 3CR's live Invasion Day special broadcast from 10 a.m., we're going to bring you recordings from a panel discussion held yesterday evening, Sunday the 25th of January, at Camp Sovereignty. A few hundred people gathered on this important site of Aboriginal occupation to hear from frontline Aboriginal warriors Juran Bunjalini Robbie Thorpe, Yaron Cousins Bundle, and Kieran Stewart Asherton, reflecting on the first Invasion Day since the signing of the Treaty for Victoria and offering an alternative space for discussion about what it means. The panel, organized by Crime Scene Australia, Black People's Union, and Camp Sovereignty, ran across 2 hours, so what we bring you this morning is just part of the discussion. We'll now hear MC Manju introducing the panel.
At the end of 2025, the Treaty for Victoria was signed. The First Peoples Victoria website states that this is Australia's first treaty negotiated between First Peoples in Victoria and the Victorian government. These treaty talks in Victoria have been ongoing for approximately a decade, but despite how widely promoted it's been, not everyone is happy with the outcome. And it's been pretty difficult to spread and share alternative perspectives on this issue, especially for grassroots sovereign mob who lack significant resources and any government funding. So Crime Scene Australia, Camp Sovereignty and the Black People's Union decided to host this panel today to provide some alternative perspectives on this issue. I'll do the intros of our panelists. This one's pretty long because he's had kind of a long life. So first, Juran Bunjalini, Uncle Robbie Thorpe. Uncle Robbie is a Kroa Te Tonglong, Kaurnai and Kulin political activist and is a trailblazing figure in the fight for justice. Uncle Robbie has organised challenges to genocide, colonisation and assimilation for over 40 years, always working towards Aboriginal economic and political independence. He's renowned for his legal challenges that expose the systemic barriers preventing accountability for genocide under Australian law. For decades, Uncle Robbie has utilised courts and international legal frameworks to address injustices, including genocide committed both against First Nations people in Australia and globally. Robbie Thorpe is an accomplished broadcaster, political and cultural commentator, and a dedicated community leader. He uses his platform as a broadcaster to amplify struggles for land back and for sovereign law to be reinstated with Aboriginal people as the guardians, custodians and caretakers of the land. Beyond the airwaves, Robbie has been a passionate activist and a leader in community-led movements such as the original Pay the Rent initiative, the Treaty Republic and the Black GST, Genocide Sovereignty Treaty. He has contributed to the groundbreaking works like Decolonizing Solidarity and has been the subject of documentaries, art and academic interviews highlighting his life's work and impact on society. Most recently in Our Warrior, the story of Robbie Thorpe, which was released last year. And yeah, also involved in the original Camp Sovereignty in 2006 and then re-establishing Camp Sovereignty about 2 years ago alongside Kieran. Next up is Yaron Cousins Bundle. Yaron is a proud Gunditjmara Yuin Bidjara woman. She is a firekeeper here at Camp Sovereignty and Gunditjmara and Jabarung law woman. She's a whale dreaming custodian on her Gunditjmara bloodline and the founder of SOPEC, which is the Southern Ocean Protection Embassy Collective, a dream for the protection of the Southern Ocean in support of tribal custodians of Gunditjmara coastal land and sea country. And our last panelist is Kieran Stewart Asherton. Kieran is a proud Bonnywandian traditional owner from the occupied Yuin Nation. He's a radio host, including of Yuliman on 3CR, an author and the education officer of the Black People's Union, which is a revolutionary organisation that aims to empower Indigenous people in so-called Australia to pursue full self-determination and sovereignty. Kieran uses his platforms to amplify First Nations voices and connect local struggles to global movements. With a background in education, psychology, and policy, Kieran is a community leader and a revolutionary theorist with over 15 years of organizing experience, bringing sharp analysis, strategic vision, and deep cultural knowledge to advancing decolonization, anti-imperialism, and justice. And my name's Manju. I work with Uncle Robbie at Crime Scene Australia, and I'll be facilitating. Thanks. I'll be facilitating tonight's panel. So to kick off, I guess the questions are kind of grouped into themes. So we've got a couple of opening questions, and then we'll move to sovereignty and legitimacy, process and power, material outcomes and symbolism, looking abroad, and then alternatives and forward vision. So to start us off, how do each of you understand the Victorian government's so-called treaty process, and what are your concerns with it? And Uncle Robbie, I'm going to ask you to start because you did advocate for treaty early on. And yeah, now your position, or yeah, I guess your opinion on this treaty is a bit different. So do you want to go first, and then we'll move to Yaron and then Kieran?
Thanks, Manju. I just want to thank organisers of the panel tonight and acknowledge the two other panel members here, Kieran and Yaron. Also, I want to acknowledge the workers here at Camp Sovereignty, Yaron and Claude in particular, and all the crew that are around them. Kept it going through the tough months, winter. I just want to acknowledge that work that they've done here. And welcome you all to this beautiful little space we've got here. A little bit of land back, I see it as. It's also known as the King's Domain. I think it's very appropriate that we take this place back. In relationship to the treaty, yes, I did mention the treaty back there. I don't know if you remember the dialogues that were part of the constitutional inclusion and Uluru business that happened. And when they came to Melbourne, they had these dialogue meetings. And someone asked me at that meeting whether what I thought about what should happen from there, because you know, most people are against the idea of being included into their constitution at this time. And I said, we'd like some treaty justice first. That was in relationship to the federal constitution, nothing to do with the state. And the state took it on, assumed responsibility for that and ran off and went forward with this idea of a treaty. And it was very inappropriate. You know, we're not looking for a lowly state colonial government legislation, be calling that a treaty. The terms of reference and conditions, I'm still asking who wrote those, because I'm pretty sure it wasn't our mob. But that, for me, was the end of any negotiation. That was, you know, that's basically what the negotiations was about. But that was written by someone else, and we were slotted into that process. And the state government sort of took control of it. For me, this treaty they call it, the Treaty for Victoria, you see through the trees over there, there's a statue for a woman named Victoria. And why on earth would you call it a Treaty for Victoria? Really, I'm really offended by that. You know, why didn't they call it the Treaty for Coolin, or the Treaty for Gunai, or the Treaty for Wamba Wamba? One of our nations, what we're doing is enshrining that name in history, and we're having a treaty for Victoria. Now that's bullshit as far as I'm concerned. I find that very offensive for a start. But I think the whole process was rubbish. I don't remember many people talking about treaties in Victoria. I was one of them. I promoted the idea of a treaty. I know that not everyone agrees with treaties, but we're talking about a sovereign treaty at international law. Now, there's this thing called the Vienna Law of Treaties. That would have been a minimum for me. what we've ended up with is state colonial legislation. It's hardly a treaty. It's rubbish. It's insulting and offensive. It's shameful. You know, 10-year process went on there. You know, the customary law elders, you know, the bloodline back to the territory elders, hardly got a look in that process. If they did, it was an afterthought. You know, the whole process was done. They should have been front and centre for that whole process. But no, that didn't happen. So I think it's basically rubbish. It's another racist piece of legislation. And that's all we're ever going to get from a racist government. You know, we're talking about international law. And, you know, I won't settle for that. Like I said, we want a sovereign treaty. You know, we want to boot this criminal outfit out of here. At least deal with the issues of genocide and sovereignty. And when we first established this place, Camp Sovereignty, they were the issues, the fundamental legal issues of international law that need to be resolved in this country. Genocide, the issues surrounding genocide, the acknowledgement of our sovereign rights in this country, the precedent law that we've got here, the sustainable law that stood the test of time. We want that acknowledged and recognised. And then we could get to a point where we could talk about a treaty, where we could accommodate, you know, the colonisers in this country. That's the way it had to be. We'll be right in the terms of reference and conditions of how that goes down, not the state. And I think it was got off on the wrong foot to begin with. So, you know, like I said, I think it's shameful, offensive and insulting, this process here. And I'm against it totally. Probably the only good thing I can say about it is that a lot of our young people got to learn about what a treaty was. They didn't know what it was before. So there's some consolation, I suppose, if they're starting to understand those issues, but there's a lot more to it than state government legislation. They want to take it to the international level, take it a step higher at least. So it's my sort of take on it. And I suppose that's all right for an opener.
Yeah, thanks, Unc. This is, falsehood. It's not by our law of the land, sky and sea. So if treaty was going to benefit us, you know, that should be first and foremost going back to our cultural governance and the way that we have always done things. And, you know, there is a lot of lost information and misinformation. And, you know, we still love all our treaty family that are fighting for our rights, but we are unseated. And that is, you know, created a sign-off document. And we don't agree with that because it's very exclusive and it's cut out some of our other family clans that are meant to be at the table having a say. So, yeah, we are unseated until it's about the land, sky and sea and our old ways law. It's a falsehood.
I fully agree with, you know, what Uncle Robbie and Cousin Yaron are saying. I just want to add on to it as well, like a bit why I'm here talking about treaty when I'm not actually from this state. My mob are the Yuin people up on the south coast of what you now know as New South Wales. But from a cultural point of view, back in the day, mob couldn't do something that would affect another mob further down. Like, you know, if mob wanted to do something to a river and it was going to impact the people downstream, a different mob, they couldn't do that without going and yarning with them first and organise it with them first. Now, this whole Vic State treaty process has completely ignored all those cultural laws that we had in regards to that. And now, as a result, we've got these other state-based treaties popping up right across the continent. Like up in New South Wales at the moment, they're doing all these so-called consultations around treaty now, and they're looking to push through a New South Wales treaty, which is going to pretty much be based on the same treaty that they've got down here. So in a lot of ways, you know, we've been up in New South Wales, we've been completely cut out of the actual proper negotiation of it all, because the state government up there is just going to run their own race based on what's happening down here. So, you know, our voice has been completely cut out. Our authority and our sovereignty and our self-determination has been completely cut out as a result. And I just really want to, you know, really amplify what Uncle Robbie was saying about state legislation. And at the end of the day, it's not a treaty. They're calling it a treaty, but it's not a treaty. A treaty is an agreement between two or more sovereign nations. Victoria is not a sovereign nation. It's a state within a so-called sovereign nation of Australia. What it is a domestic agreement at the end of the day. It's just a piece of legislation with treaty in its main title. But because it's a piece of legislation, it's not actually a treaty. It's not anything that's actually binding. Any future government can come in, they can appeal it, they can amend it, they can suspend it entirely. And in fact, we've already had the LNP government down here in Victoria say that if they get elected in as a majority government, they're just going to scrap it altogether. You know, what sort of a treaty is that when any future government can just turn around and we don't want to do this anymore and can just scrap it? You know, it's just nonsense at the end of the day. And actually, I'll save the rest for later because we've got some other questions about what I'm going to say.
Before I go to the next question, I know all their answers are really good, but if we cannot clap after every single response, I feel like we'll be here for ages. Okay, so the next question. A lot of people hear the word treaty and assume it's automatically progressive or decolonial. What do you think of that assumption in this context? And also, what should people be wary of when governments are framing colonial reform as historic or once in a generation?
Well, we're saying it's a falsehood. This talk of treaty. It's not a real treaty. And we should be very concerned about where this has taken us. And what Kieran was saying, you know, Victoria being the first ones to treat. It's not the very first treaty. There was a treaty here in Victoria in 1835, the Batman Treaty. I think that was a better treaty than the one we've got now. You know? You have a look at what this represents, this treaty. There's no rights recognised. There's no land back. There's no talk of peace. There's no release of prisoners. As far as I'm concerned, every blackfella in jail today is a prisoner of war. There was a war in this country. You know, these things haven't been addressed properly. You know, that's what usually my understanding of treaties was to end war. You know, that wasn't really taken on. You know, when did the hostilities end against the Aboriginal people? Is there an official end of hostilities? How do you have a negotiation while there's still that? It's still a situation. It's totally unfair. It's under duress and undue influence. Those things have got to end. You know, we've got to have time to take this on and put our position in a proper and clear way. Otherwise, it's just more legislation, rubbish legislation being imposed on us again. And like I said, these white fellas wrote the terms of reference and conditions. That, to me, is the treaty process right there. And we were slotted into that. And what I've been saying, that this is a treaty, the government done a treaty with itself, its own employees and corporate-funded bodies. It wasn't with the elders who were the bloodline back to the territory, the elders in council. They're our authorities and always have been. So there's many dangers in this process. And if you have a look at the history of this country, Victoria is the premier state. What happens here gets reflected around the country. That's the real danger, what Kieran was saying. They're going to follow suit. Victoria establishes the law here. They did that being the first constitution. I think it was back in 1855 or 51. But that was the very first constitution in this country. And it was based on the idea of terra nullius, empty land. So we don't want to be following this precedent. My advice to all the other blackfellas around this country, totally reject the idea of Victorian treaty and being a a marker for what they should be doing in the future. So that's my concerns about this treaty business.
Yeah, I'd just like to quickly and respectfully acknowledge, Uncle Robbie and my black duck cousin, Kieran, and extend those deep respects to the Bunurong, Bunbarang and the Woiwurrung speaking peoples of the Kulin Nation, and extend that to respects to all of you who have come here to Wanga Nissen today. And, you know, based on those respects, those old ways, customs of respect, that's what's missing in this hybrid treaty. And we had old ways of clan treaties and then nation treaties. And they were done based around our men's and women's business. And it was based around the country where that law comes from. And all of the, 350 plus nations of Black Australia and those 700 plus mother tongue language dialects. So, yeah, one piece of paper is very disrespectful to our law, and it needs to be, brought back to those old ways of council. There should have been men's and women's councils set up, and they should have gone around to all of the elders and communities and included everybody, because our law has a place of belonging for everybody. And we hope that everyone can take their place of belonging in, honouring those old ways. But especially for our mob that haven't respected that law in what they've made.
I just really want to emphasise the point as well that be wary of the language that they use. You know, when they talk about treaty being progressive and when they talk about it being to decolonial and whatever else and stuff, don't just take them on face value. Don't just listen to what they say and, accept that they're telling the truth. We know Australia's a liar. Australian government's liars. They've always been liars. They've been liars ever since they come here in 1788. You know, the very first thing that they did when they come here was lie and claim that the land was terra nullius. There was nobody here. There was no one's land. So, when you see them talking about these progressive things, look more into it. Don't just, believe what they say. And in fact, I'd even go as far as to say, if you hear the government telling you something, assume it's in a lie. Assume off the bat they're lying. They're not telling the truth, because they don't tell the truth when it comes to blackfella affairs. They never have, and they probably never will, because it contradicts their entire existence occupying our lands. Just be, wary of the language that they use and look more into it. Do your own research. Listen to actual sovereign blackfellas as well. That's another thing that a lot of people don't like hearing, but at the end of the day, it's true. There's two different kinds of blackfellas out there. There is blackfellas that still stand in their sovereignty, that's still connected to their communities, to their culture and to their nations. And then there are blackfellas who are cozy within the colony, who are paid by the government, who act as mouthpieces for the government. And, there's the real obvious examples, like people like Jacinta Price. She's a Liberal national politician. But it's not just your Jacinta Prices. It's also the people that appear to be, so-called progressive. It's your Aboriginal Labor MPs, for example, who get up there and sign off on the exact same stuff as the LNP does. In fact, if you actually go and look at the policies, Labor's worse for blackfellas than LNP has. And, that's a fact that you can go and look at any stat and I'll back that up. Whenever Labor gets in, our incarceration rates go up. Whenever Labor gets in, our child removal rates get up. Whenever the LNP gets in, they slash a bunch of funding and stuff actually plateaus for us a bit. Labor's actually worse. So when they're talking about, being progressive and they're talking about doing the right thing, they're full of shit.
You're tuned into 3CR 855 AM, 3CR Digital and streaming on 3cr.org.au. We're bringing you some of a panel discussion about the recently signed Treaty for Victoria, featuring Jaron Bunjalini, Robbie Thorpe, Yaron Cousins Bundle, and Kieran Stewart Asherton with MC Manju from the Crime Scene Australia campaign.
So a few of you have already touched on this in your answers, but who actually has the authority to enter into a treaty on behalf of First Nations, and does that current process respect that authority?
No, it doesn't. Our authority in Aboriginal law is our elders. We all know that. And we need time. Like, we're in a state of war, Aboriginal people. You can just look at the stats around the place, the conditions that we're in. We need a bit of time for to heal before we can step into and talk treaty business with the oppressors. So, yeah, we need time to re-establish our elders' councils, our men's business, our women's business, and our initiation business for our young people. So we need to be in a position to be even talking about a treaty. And that's why we when we established Camp Australia, we spoke about the Black GST. We need to go through those issues of genocide, sovereignty, and then the possibility of a treaty. But not had to be in that order as well. So it means putting our elders in place first and get your jackboots off our neck for a start. And we need some time to sit down amongst ourselves in a place of peace, where we can talk amongst ourselves how we want to approach this stuff. That never happened. So our elders are our law. It always was and it always will be the case. Until that's recognised appropriately, it's not going to be what we're going to get out of this. I know what our elders are going to say. You know, we all do. And you know, we can't sell our land. The land is our mother. You know, and like I said before, there's nothing in this so-called treaty. There's no rights recognised. There's no land back. There's no end of war. There's no peace, talk of peace. There's no release of prisoners. So what is this about? It's just rubbish. I think that what they did achieve was create a service welfare organisation, a revamped one. That's all it is. And if, you know, the bureaucrats, the employees of the state, the corporate bodies, they're the ones that have created this treaty, not the elders. And that's where it should be, squarely. They've got to be front and centre in this whole process, otherwise it's rubbish. So that's what we need a detente, a period of, so we can be in a position to have proper informed consent and all those sorts of things go down first. Otherwise, it's just more of the same racist rubbish coming from the state.
Yeah, this we in Premier, this sacred fire. Where's the talks around the fire? Where's the truth telling? There's been some corporate parties held, but there hasn't been those places on country, going back to those places that we know where the law is strong. And, you know, the law is strong everywhere, but these law sites, these teaching sites, men's and women's, you know, the ceremony grounds, that's where it needed to go if people were serious about, you know, talking about standing in their true birthrights, because that's what we have. And, you know, I think that's why they're rushing this bullshit, because we are still the strongest threat to the colony. Because when we stand in our old ways law, that's still strong, you know, that hasn't been lost everywhere in places. It's just still sleeping, waiting for the mob to return, and as Uncle said, that healing and that cultural restoration process to take place. And, you know, we're carrying those cultural and colonial loads, and we have been for a long time, juggling, you know, dedicating our life to reviving that cultural law, and then still balancing out how we can challenge the government and, you know, the other processes, petitions and shit that doesn't work for us mob. and is a waste of time in one sense, because yeah, now we just need to, too much time's gone on, and we need to just bring back those old ways birthrights. And so that's one of the reasons why, you know, where some of us have really sat down here and like held ground here in honour of all of those ancestors, in honour of all of the people that have, you know, created these spaces for us to stand true and stand by that law. So yeah, we're bringing for, you know, some of the words, there's heaps of them to say, but yeah, the black matriarchy, the grandmother law, you know, women's business, through the sacred fire, and in honour of all of our people and our men, women and children. But yeah, we're taking it back now, because this treaty doesn't cover what we need to do to care for country and family. That's what it's all about.
And just to really like emphasise on that point about who has the authority, like these people that work for government corporations, they don't have the authority to sign a treaty on our behalf. You know, that's, for starters, isn't there such a thing as a conflict of interest? You know, when somebody's got their bread and butter from their employment working for the government, how can they go and turn around and sign a treaty on behalf of blackfellas when they're in bed with the same government? And, you know, as sister's saying, it needs to go back to the people who actually have the authority. It needs to go back to the elders. It needs to go back to the traditional owners of country. It needs to go back to the land itself. The land is the one that has ultimate authority over us. None of that's been included in this whole treaty negotiation.
And with no treaty umpire either.
Mm. Exactly. But yeah, you know, they've got no authority to be signing these treaties on behalf of blackfellas when they don't represent community. They're not, for the most part, you know, quite a lot of them, they're not actually a part of their communities. They're not a part of their culture. They're not doing the right thing. They're not, you know, the actual proper elders within the community or the proper traditional owners of their lands. They're coming in, getting paid to sign these treaties on behalf of the government, with the government, and it's just a massive conflict of interest. It's just a massive undermining of our actual sovereignty and our self-determination. And look, I'm not a big believer in international law. I reckon international law is bullshit as well. But at the end of the day, in international law, we've got, where we're supposed to have anyways, under the United Nations Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous People, we're meant to have free, prior and informed consent. There's been no free, prior informed consent for these treaties. And when they have gone out and done these consultations and they've done these information days and whatever else, the government's just presented it as a positive. They haven't talked about the positives and the negatives. They haven't given us all the information to be able to make a proper, fully informed consent. They turned around and said, look, we got a treaty for you. It's a good thing. Why don't you sign here on the line?
Is the significance of this treaty being a state-based treaty or legislation, rather than nation to nation or an international treaty?
Yeah, well, good question. What is the significance of this treaty? It's not significant. We always talked about doing treaties amongst ourselves, if there was going to be treaties, you know, and reconciling amongst ourselves. You know, we're been divided by this country, by the occupiers in this land. You know, we lived in harmony. You know, we were together, and so there's reasons for us to reconcile. There's no reasons for us to reconcile with the invaders, the trespassers, the invaders, the stray aliens. There's no reason for us to do that. So the significance is none. There's no significance in this having a statewide treaty. We want an international, for whatever it's worth, because I agree to some degree that, you know, the international law is not much chop either, but it's, we're not going to get justice here in this racist institution they call Australia. You have a look at it. The government's racist. The judiciary's racist. The media's racist. And the education system's racist. Chronically bad. It's disgusting, Australia. It's the most racist country on earth, as far as I'm concerned. It's been 250-odd years since, what was his name? Lieutenant Cook. Was told, came into this country, he was told to get consent. That never happened. So this occupation is without consent. So they don't get to make laws for our people. There's no basis for that. So the significance is it's very dangerous to allow this to go down, not to be challenged. And I think it was out of desperation the state government here grabbed onto the treaty idea. Now, the whole idea of the voice failed dismally, and they put a lot into that, right? I think it was $500 million was spent on trying to get that voice up. It failed. So they were sort of left floundering, and they grabbed at the treaty business, and it was they've made a mess of it. And I want to be taken back to the beginning. Got to get consent first, Oz. You got to end your hostilities against our people. You got to acknowledge that there was a war here, and that war needs to be officially acknowledged and ended. End of hostilities. You can release all of our prisoners, and you can give some land back, and you can recognise some of our rights. Where is it? So the significance of this treaty, there is none, other than it's been a dangerous precedent for us all. And like I said, Victoria is the premier state. They all follow from out of Victoria. What Victoria gets away with, they impose on the other states, it seems. So it's dangerous. My advice to the rest of the mobs around this country, don't do what Victoria did, well, that so-called Victoria, because it's rubbish, you know. We can't let these people get away with that. You know, it's nothing in the treaty for our people, this bullshit treaty. I call it the Mickey Mouse Moomba Treaty. You know what Moomba means? Mm-hmm. That's what it is. It's no significance, really. And like I was saying, they were just grasping at straws after their voice thing failed. And they grabbed onto this treaty business and ran with it and used their own bureaucrats. They had nothing other than after that, after their voice failed. And this is what's given them life. And they spent $500 million in this on the voice. God knows how much they spent on this treaty. It's been no benefits for our people. You know, the deaths in custody continue at the highest rate ever. They're still removing our children. The conditions of life haven't improved. So what the hell is this treaty about? There's nothing in it.
Hey, my Moana family's here. Hello. what Unc said, there is a danger, but, you know, it's also, like, deadly. It's both sides of the word for us, I think. We are the biggest threat to the colony, and that's why they're rushing through what they need to rush through. I don't think that there is any of the young people that understood that they were targeted as some of the biggest voting group in the state. And that's wrong to use our young people in that regard without what Brother said about full information. That's a disrespect to our legacy. That our birthrights, you know, are our cultural law. And that law extends through the land, sky and sea. So until those respects are given, we've got to come to the table knowing that the war isn't over, you know, and they can't have a treaty when the war's not over. So, yeah, they're gammon.
And just on the, like, significance or the insignificance, I should say, of the whole treaty process being a state-based treaty, is there's a few things here, but, like, first off, like I was saying at the start, it's non-committal. You know, it's not an obligation for them. They can turn around and they can scrap it. But on top of that, because it's a state-based domestic agreement, they can't actually give us what we want. You know, they don't have the authority or the power, the Vic State Parliament, to actually give us stuff like designated seats in Parliament, to actually give us land back, to actually give us autonomy and self-determination. To do that stuff, if the Vic State Parliament wanted to do that stuff, they would have to hold a referendum and they would have to do a bunch of other stuff. And, you know, it'll be up to the mercy of the broader Victorian population to decide on whether or not they wanted that to happen. If they were serious about doing a treaty, it wouldn't be a state-based domestic agreement. It'll be an actual treaty between the Commonwealth, or even higher than the Commonwealth, you know, the Crown, and First Nations people. Because then that way they could guarantee us stuff like designated seats in Parliament if that's what we wanted. You know, they could guarantee us stuff like land rights and land back, and they could actually guarantee that we would have some sort of autonomy and self-determination over our own affairs. But the way it's set up, they can't guarantee any of that stuff. They're not going to guarantee any of that stuff. Instead, all we're getting out of this treaty is powerless consultation bodies. You know, the exact same thing that they push with the Voice to Parliament nonsense. We give you a powerless little body where you can say what you want to say, but we don't have to listen to you at the end of the day. We can go and do what we want anyways.
This is the Treaty for Victoria panel discussion held at Camp Sovereignty yesterday evening, Sunday the 25th of January. We'll skip ahead now, and in this next segment, we'll hear a bit more from Yaron, who also invited Gemma Cronin, Bachala Wapabara, and Jinibara senior elder who was visiting Camp Sovereignty to join the discussion.
Yaron, I'm going to ask you to answer the next question first. You've done a lot of work protecting country with SOPEC and the birthing trees and stuff. What risks do you see in these kind of state-created representative bodies and corporations and assemblies being used to speak for country?
Yeah, there's a pretty big risk. Pretty dangerous, you know, like I mentioned before, for our young people. You know, what are they being born into, having their birthrights taken away? But, yeah, I just don't see, you know, if there's so much destruction going on right now, you know, important conversations, you know, can take a long time, but not at the cost of what's happening, not at the cost of sacred country. And, you know, there's a huge, like, legal risk to us, you know, standing up in there against their, against VicPol and their legal system. And, you know, some of us have experienced that firsthand about, you know, being locked up for standing up for country. I'm really lucky that, you know, I've managed to dodge that, but a lot of mob have been, you know, like targeted by different government, you know, people and departments and other gas companies and corporations that, you know, erase anything that goes against, you know, the standard of what they're trying to push across. And it's, you know, as Unc said, it's a really, really low standard. Like our law was, you know, sacred and lasted since, you know, time immemorial for a reason. And it's, you know, held country sacred all that time. And for treaty to be able to come along and say, oh, well, we're working on this, we're working on these rights, while the river's dying and your country's burning, we're still working on it. You know, like there's that the biggest risk right there. It's just the ignorance of what's going in, what's going on in the office and what's going on country. And, you know, you can, people turn the blind eye to that, but it's a setup, basically. And it's a setup to enable all of these, you know, domestic and international mining companies and even lobbyists that are part of different industries, like, you know, the poisons industry that targets, that covers our country in 1080 baits and targets our native species, you know.
And all of these processes are happening under Treaty's nose, and I just don't see, you know, if that was a real process, why can't people, instead of getting paid a pretty big pay packet, why can't that support be going back to country, family and country, where it should be, you know? So it's pretty dangerous, and, yeah, we need them to recognise that because they haven't covered the right, you know, way of doing things, they haven't stuck to cultural protocol, they've gone into a white governance system and they've dismissed that people like us are really out there defending country. So, yeah, it's pretty big, you know, kicking in the guts for some of us mob that have been out defending these places and saying, well, look, you've got all these resources, you've got all this community funding. That's what blackfellas on the ground need. You know, we're not going to be beggars in our own country, but as Unc said, you know, there's the right law to get behind and to follow that, you know, and to resource, like we're going to try and set up this Sacred Fire Originals Fund and create these songline camps. And that is a way that we're going to, you know, take back our birthrights and decolonise and show people what to do now, because, you know, all these other people bought into it. And as far as I'm concerned, and the law, the creation law business that we carry and we're obligated to first and foremost, yeah, they haven't done right by that. And we won't sit back and let them speak or sign off on anything that has to do with sacred lands and that affects all of those song lines, you know, that is still there. A lot of people go, oh, yeah, these mob, you know, we'll go up to Uluru, we'll go everywhere else for some cultural law experience. But our law is really strong here down in the south still, and, you know, people need to recognise that, and we need to be resourced to create that pathway forward about proper food and medicine sovereignty, you know, and that creates that body sovereignty and the free, you know, spirits on in their place of belonging in our law. Till that happens, yeah, treaty, there's a lot to work on. And they can meet us on the front line, you know. They can come and see what needs to happen and where that resourcing needs to go, and how come they haven't pulled up on, you know, any of the, like, rights behind, yeah, native title and the voice and all of these things that are set up for our people to fail. They're written by white fellas, you know, to divide and conquer, basically. If we got a little bit of space here, I'd love to just quickly invite a really, really staunch, brilliant matriarch to just talk about some of the sovereign experiences that she knows and understands about treaty, and explain to you about native title and how what we're up against. And how treaty has come about. Yeah, she come a long way from Bachelor Country, Ngari, what white fellas call Fraser Island. And yeah, she's been part of a really amazing sovereign story, and just wanted just to give her a few minutes of your time to hear another matriarch's perspective. And just acknowledge Aunty Marge and Lydia that they couldn't be here today, but they're, you know, we're all connected, and we're all, you know, our spirits are all with this fight, the Black Sovereign Movement, and what we have to do to really advance our birthrights and our stance in this country.
Bokinyata Wurulsa. Pay my respects to this country here, all of the clan groups of the Kulin Nation, to all the clan groups and nations that are connected to the ancestors interned here, to pay my respects to all of them too. And just, yeah, I feel the weight in this place sometimes, and I think that's how it is all over for a lot of us. I'm from Queensland, so yeah, I tell people that aren't from this country that it's like the deep south in America. That's how bad it is at home. You know, right now I live in an area that is a one nation stronghold, and we don't have an upper house in Queensland. That's why we get all the crackpots and Clive Palmer's, Pauline Hanson, people like that. The funny talk there, I've got a few things I wrote down. I'll just, you know, first of all, like, I guess for me, as an elder from my country, a lot of us are watching Victoria right now, you know, and wondering what's going to come out of the treaty. And, yeah, got a pretty good outlay on where you mob are sitting too, and you know, answered a lot of my questions. I'm anti-treaty. I've been invited into four different lots of treaty negotiations, but as soon as the Liberal government got in Queensland, it got pulled off the table. And when they were asking me to come in on about the third round, I said, you know, I don't know why you keep inviting me, I'm anti-treaty. And they said, we actually want both sides in the room. And I was like, oh, that sounds good, you know, but we never actually got there. And quite frankly, when you're talking about treaties, I don't think that there's a treaty worldwide that's ever been honoured. And that's a sad situation. I mean, there's a lot of Middle Eastern treaties being broken right now as well. Syria and Palestine, wherever, there's so many. And you can't even name them all like in a quick yarn. So there's just too many. So I think as a people, we need to look at that and remember that, yeah, like, are we really that stupid to go into another treaty just to be broken like every other one worldwide? So, yeah, Magna Carta law, you know, there's three ways to take people's country, and it's through conquer, treaty or terra nullius. And they took us through terra nullius, which is land of no people, just pretended we didn't exist. So what Mabo did, it gave the TI mob, just touching on that a bit, brother, because I've been an applicant. I worked on native title for years, and I'm a linguist, so history telling and recording, and also getting into all of our old archives and a lot of different sort of research I've done. And, you know, we've got three ways internationally under their law, under imperial law, that they could take us. And they did it in a lie. They pretended we didn't exist. And, like, we're here, and we're still here, and we're not going anywhere. And that's something that Mabo proved, was that terra nullius was a lie. And that's all it did for us. And out of that came the Native Title Act. And the Native Title Act has been a piece of paper that has segregated our mobs all over the country. Like, I don't know, sometimes I wonder if it's actually setting up a class system. Well, we never had one, and I don't believe that we need to move into that. But as a people, that's not part of our governance and law. So I reckon this whole Victorian government, or any government, even Queensland government or anywhere, they want to get a treaty to validate themselves, their own existences, all the past bad behaviours that they've done, that they can no longer pretend we're not here for. And that's what Native Title's about. It was about sitting down at the table. We had to prove our cultural connections, you know, prove where we come from when people have been removed and moved all over the country, lost languages, identities, country, songlines, trying to restore all of that, and then prove to a court that actually it still is alive within our bloodlines. For my mob, we had the state government step out, refuse to come to tenure. Tenure's a process when you sit down and you actually work out what bits of land are available. In Queensland, we don't have Crown land. We've got unallocated state lands. That's what Joe Bjelke-Petersen did, tried to do a massive land grab. Anyway, so we were going for the unallocated state lands. The state refused to come to tenure. We were freaking out. We thought, well, how are we going to get any land back? Then we decided we'll write down statements and try and tie up as many unallocated state lands as we can, just with our cultural knowledges, like doing like cultural heritage and identity and language reports, like mega. And we put out word to everybody, and only two people responded to that, and I was one of them, and one other person. And between us, we managed to lock in 160,000 hectares of exclusive lands. That's a big thing. Exclusive lands is where you can do what you want. Army's not allowed on there. Docs aren't allowed on there. Cops aren't allowed on there. Anyway, my name's on that order. Since that order was in 2019, I've got four children. My sons have been incarcerated. My daughter-in-laws have been incarcerated. My children have been grabbed. We've been driven off the land. We've had thousands and thousands of dollars worth of land and materials and infrastructure, gates, all sorts of things ripped down. Pauline Hanson used me in her voice campaign, her no campaign. And that's all right with me because I was a no vote anyway. You know, that's another thing. When the GG, the Governor General, looked at that referendum paperwork, he said, no problem, they got no veto rights. So the minute, that means, and for people that don't understand what veto rights are, it's the right for us to say yes or no about policies about us. So the minute the GG said that, I was like, well, I'm voting no too. Stuff that. And when you talk about a body, sorry, to replace or to do or to actually govern this country our way, I think the best thing we could do is boot out the Governor General and put in a national sovereign council. Maybe a push for something like that, eh? Governor General's got to go. I mean, they're talking about him recently ripping out, you know, Gough Whitlam. So, you know, there's one person who can pull down a whole government. Why is he still there? I mean, all you people that say you're Australian and you want to have your rights as Australian people, you know, the Crown can come in here any time and rip your Prime Minister out. So actually, we should be in that position. That's our position. Get rid of the GG.
Yes, aunt. See, told you aunt was brilliant. Yeah, we're just about to have a feed and we'll leave aunt with the last word. But just to also, yeah, pay your respects to the sacred fire. But if you could also think about what decolonization actually means, you know, like we could talk about like treaty or a load of your titles to lease this shit back to, you know, the Australian government and all these other companies. We could talk about all these different birthrights. But I want to see some action in my lifetime for my babies. And I'm sure that, you know, all of these elders, you know, we want to do elders that have done the hard yards proud and them see the fruits of their labour in this lifetime too. Like, it's really important. And honouring all these old ones that have fought for, you know, what them old people's bones represent down there. They fought and died for this land. They never gave up. They never ceded their sovereignty. And there's old magic people, part of those 38 nations that are buried under that rock. And, yeah, I just would like you to think about what that would look like if this country had many sacred fires tended to by all the rightful custodians of that country and their place of belonging in the bloodlines. No more blues over native title, no more nothing, just true sovereignty in our birthrights, you know. So that's what I mentioned before about the Sacred Fire Originals Fund. That'll be set up soon. Keep your eyes open for that. And, yeah, we gotta get that resource so we can start up these songline camps and take our land and waters back and safeguard that for all of our babies, but for all of you and all of your children as well. So we need as many people to get behind this as possible. And that's how you pay your rent, people. Thank you very much for coming to listen.
That brings us to the end of the hour. We've just been listening to recordings from the Treaty for Victoria discussion panel held at Camp Sovereignty last night, Sunday the 25th of January, and organised by the Crime Scene Australia campaign, Black People's Union and Camp Sovereignty. Thanks to the incredible speakers for all they shared. Jaron Bungellini, Yaron Cousins Bundle, Kieran Stewart Asherton, and Gemma Cronin. You can find more information at crimesceneaustralia.com, blackpeoplesunion.org, and you can listen back to this show and all of the Invasion Day audio for 2026 at 3cr.org.au/Invasion Day 2026. The music on this show was Treaty by Yothu Yindi. Stay tuned.